Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, Michael Vakesha on behalf of Appellant Plaintiff Judicial Watch. Judicial Watch is not here today asking that this court substitute its own judgment for that of the government. In this case, with these specific facts, the government is not entitled to the substantial weight that is usually afforded in the typical national security and intelligence cases. This is so for three reasons. First, the government has failed to provide a sufficiently specific affidavit or evidence that the release of each image, all 52 images, of the body of Osama bin Laden could be expected to cause exceptionally grave damage to the national security. Second, the images at issue in this case are not the typical scenario where courts usually defer to agency assessments of harm. And third, not all of the 52 images pertain to foreign activities or intelligence activities in a meaningful way. First, I just want to make clear that I'm referring to images today because we still do not know whether or not we are talking about photographs or video recordings. The government...
Could I just ask you, I just want to be clear I got the third point. You say they're not the declarations are not as specific as to each of the 52. Then what was the next one?
The second one was that this isn't the typical scenario.
Not the typical scenario. What does that mean?
In the typical scenario, for example, the Students Against Genocide case, the images at issue or the information at issue involve sensitive intelligence information, intelligence activities, sources, methods.
All right. And then your third one was something about it's not related to national security in a meaningful way?
Foreign activities or intelligence activities.
In a meaningful way?
In a meaningful way, yes, sure.
And who makes that judgment?
I think this court makes that judgment.
As to whether it's meaningfully related to foreign affairs and national security?
That's correct. In this case, Your Honor, the government has only said that these records pertain to foreign activities or pertain to intelligence activities because they were a product of an overseas operation.
Well, what it seems pretty... So this, the executive order says foreign relations or foreign activities. And you just said overseas. That sounds foreign. There's no dispute that all of these photographs were of something that took place outside of the domestic United States, right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
So why isn't that a foreign activity of the United States?
At least some of these images took place on a U.S. aircraft carrier.
Located in outside of the United States, right?
That's correct.
In international waters.
Yes, that is correct.
Why isn't that foreign?
It's extremely broad, vague, and it's not a real standard. The concern would be...
Well, I'm not sure whether it matters, whether it's a real standard. The issue in FOIA is whether it comes within the executive order. Executive order says foreign activities. It doesn't seem vague. I mean, it might be vague if it was, docked within 100 miles of the United States, but when it's docked in international, when the boat is in international waters and many more than 1,000 miles from the United States, it seems pretty hard not to say that's a foreign activity. Wouldn't you agree with that? I mean, really, this isn't the essence of your argument, is it?
It's not the essence, no. It's our third argument, Your Honor. Our first two arguments are the stronger arguments. First, that these records, that the affidavits provided by the government provided three affidavits, that they weren't sufficiently specific with regard to each of the 52 records. The government has generally stated that some of their records were taken at the compound immediately after the raid. Some of their records were taken during the transportation of bin Laden's body. Some of the records were taken during the preparation for the burial, and some of the images depict the burial itself. In their declarations, the government only states that the graphic and gruesome photographs that depict the bullet wound to bin Laden's head, their release would cause national harm to the national security.
That's not quite what they say. They say all the documents, and they say they do mention and talk about the graphic ones. But Mr. Neller's affidavit says the release of the responsive records, and then it gives two examples. So I think you are right to focus on the. What would seem like the least dangerous of the photos, namely the burial, and that's what Judge Boasberg did. He said you have to have an explanation that covers even the least graphic, which would be the burial. But Mr. Kneller says that this is likely to lead to injury to Americans, violence and rioting abroad, exposing innocent Afghan and American civilians to harm. And he gives two examples to support this. One was the incorrect reporting by Newsweek that the Quran had been desecrated, and that by itself led to 11 people dying in Afghanistan, 30 people being injured in Egypt, and the reaction of the republication of the Danish cartoon of the Prophet Muhammad, which resulted in at least 11 people being killed in Afghanistan, including two who died when protesters turned on the U.S. air base at Bagram. Since our standard is plausible or logical, right? That's the standard.
Yes, Your Honor.
So is it not at least plausible that a government expert who testifies that this is likely to cause the same consequences as the release of the Quran, or the claim about the Quran, or the cartoon of Muhammad? Why should we not defer to them? You say this is not a question we should defer, but it's not just him. It's also Mr. Bennett, who's the director of the National Climate Science Service, and they're both telling us that there is a risk, not telling it's certain, that there is a risk that Americans and others will die if we release the documents. And our only question is that plausible? Isn't that right? Didn't I at least focus the question correctly?
To an extent, Your Honor, with all due respect, the case law seems to suggest, and it's pretty clear, that deference is only provided when the affidavits or declarations are sufficiently specific.
Well, here it's specific. Kneller's given two examples of releases of information that did result in death, and Mr. Bennett has given further explanations of the way in which Al-Qaeda is likely to use this information based on the way it's used information in the past, including the particularly the use of the deaths when the abuse of Iraqi detainees in Abu Ghraib was disclosed, and after Osama bin Laden's death, he says at paragraph 25 that Al-Qaeda has already attempted to use this, tried to stoke inflammation through Inspire magazine, Zawahiri released a video attacking the assertions that he was actually, that, I'm sorry, that bin Laden has been actually appropriately buried at sea. Why aren't those specific? You said it has to be specific. I think you're correct about that. Why isn't this specific enough?
Because the declarations generally speak about all responsive records. Mm-hmm. The government fails to appreciate that there are various types of images. There are some images that are graphic and gruesome, and those are the images that Director Bennett focuses on. He focuses on the graphic and gruesome images. The focus is not on those images that depict a somber and dignified burial at sea. Those images are not discussed. They are only referenced to, when discussing about harm to national security, they're only discussed as other records. The use of the phrase other records, this court has not found to be sufficient in the past. There is no specificity about each record and how the release of each individual record, the various images of the body cleaned and wrapped in a white sheet, the body placed in a weighted body bag, the body placed on a board and tipped over the side of the U.S. aircraft carrier, how the release of each of those images may cause harm to national security. The government just doesn't specify the harm associated with the assessment with those records.
Well, you started out by talking about a typical national security case, and the declaration suggests that this is not typical. This is the founder, so that almost anything associated with him involving foreign affairs is necessarily of concern for the reasons Judge Garland has just related. you say you're not asking the court to second-guess these evaluations and predictions, but what are you asking?
In the typical scenario, the information being withheld would reveal intelligence sources, methods, and operations. For example, in the Students Against Genocide case, the concern with the release...
I understand, but what about the concern that these images could be used for propaganda, for other reasons negative to the interests of the United States, that type of explanation by these experts?
We think in this case, in this scenario, the court is fully capable of reaching its own determination about the logic and plausibility about the release of this specific information based not only on the declarations, but also all the additional information that the government has officially acknowledged about the raid and about the burial. In this case, unlike those cases where the information would reveal secret locations overseas or secret conversations or discussions with foreign leaders, potentially foreign terrorist organizations, this will not reveal any secret information.
Right, but so the question really is, isn't this worse? They're telling us this could result in death, not just release of secret information, but death. And we do know of examples where, in this country, we would think that the release of certain things would not have led to this, and yet there were... not very long ago, a video was released that did lead to death of an American ambassador, other people, of riots in other cities. When the government tells us that this is likely to lead to death, isn't that even more something we should defer to even more than when they say, well, this is going to lead to the release of some secret information?
The declarations of government should always be reviewed, always. There's some deference that is provided to the executive there. However, in these instances, this court has the experience to look at the entire picture, to look at the specific facts and not just rubber stamp what the government says may or may not cause harm.
So it's part of your argument that given that the executive branch has already described in some detail the nature of the burial, precisely what was done both in preparing the body and burying the body, and the words that were said at the burial, that in effect they have already painted a picture, and therefore what more harm, as it were, could ensue?
The government
releasing the images, or at least some of the images.
The government has already painted a picture. In fact, it's painted a more complete picture than what the photographs themselves would disclose. We know from the government's official statements that it was conducted on the deck of the U.S. Carl Vinson. We know it took place in the North Arabian Sea. We know that the burial began at 1 a.m. and ended at 2 a.m. And then we know the details about how the body was prepared, what the visual image looked like.
So what would be your best case for the proposition that the declaration would have to say, for example, image number 32, which shows... And if you've ever seen a picture of an Egyptian mummy wrapped in an empty room, even that causes us as experts to be concerned about the potential risk to the United States' interests as well as to the injury to people.
I think Lazar, I think Allen, Campbell, all those cases talk about the deference provided after substantially sufficient, very specific declarations are provided. The case law of the circuit is pretty clear on that. The deference is afforded to the government, but only when there is specificity, when each record is accounted for on its own.
do you factor in the fact of who this is?
The government, in its opposition brief, mentions, they assert that because this is Bin Laden, it's a different scenario, it's a different case. This isn't the same as the images being released by Saddam Hussein's children and other terrorists. However, the declarations don't address that issue. The declarations do not address what concerns the government may or may not have when releasing those images versus releasing these specific images. The government in its brief talks about, well, there was some result when those images were released, that some rioting may have occurred. But there is no sworn declaration. There is no actual evidence in the record that that took place. The government is making that assertion now, but there's no evidence at the district court to say that. This was the mastermind of 9/11. This was the most wanted terrorist in the world. But the government, according to its own official statement, provided the body of Bin Laden a dignified and proper burial at sea. The government has not said those records of this somber event would cause grave national security harm if released.
All right, why don't we hear from the government? I'll give you a couple of minutes on rebuttal.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Robert Loeb from the Department of Justice, and I represent the Department of Defense and the CIA in this appeal. The district court's ruling here is correct and should be affirmed. The court properly held that the government's declarations here submitted by Director Bennett and by Lieutenant General Neller provided detailed and cogent explanations of why release of these materials could reasonably be expected to harm national security. As they say, they will incite violence, they will aid al-Qaeda in recruitment, and will lead to attack on U.S. military, U.S. citizens, and attacks against our allies. The question under this court's precedence is whether those directions, declarations are sufficiently detailed and whether the predictions of the likelihood of harm to national security are plausible and logical. And the district court correctly found that they were. The plaintiffs here argue that those declarations are not sufficiently detailed. Director Bennett, who has 25 years of experience in dealing with terrorist groups and al-Qaeda, is one of our nation's leading experts on such matters, submitted a 22-page declaration cogently explaining why release of all the records here and that all the records here are regarding and depictions of Bin Laden's body, why release of all those materials would harm national security. The plaintiffs argue here that he did not make distinctions between between the photographs, and that's simply not the case. The declaration specifically speaks to the photographs regarding the burial at sea and said the release of those as well would cause a grave harm. And specifically, he notes that in general, speaking to all the photographs, that they will be used to inflame tensions, they'll be used to encourage retaliatory attacks, but as to the burial images, specifically noted that at the time the al-Qaeda leader al-Zawahiri already had tried to use Bin Laden's death and the treatment of his body to inflame violence against the United States and against United States citizens, and has already asserted that the method of the burial that we undertook did not adhere to Islamic law. Releasing those images would just provide additional ammunition for those who want to distort what happened and to make claims that we were being disrespectful to Islamic law, that we were being disrespectful to Bin Laden or to the to Muslim people, and that that itself could be used as propaganda or it could be used to incite violence. Specifically, Lieutenant General Neller and Director Bennett here said the release of these materials, including the burial of images, would be used to recruit, to raise funds for al-Qaeda and inflame tensions in general. And both of them specifically said this was not just mere conjecture. They were doing it based on experience, past experience of violence, when similar things had occurred. The plaintiffs here referred to the deaths of Saddam Hussein's sons and release of those images. But even the materials they submitted on that showed that the government experts at the time said the release of those materials would in fact inflame violence, but they found there was an overriding need at the time to prove to the Iraqi people that Saddam Hussein's sons were dead. And of course, that's an assessment the executive branch can make on its own under the executive order regarding whether material should be released or not. It certainly the materials they submitted regarding Saddam Hussein's sons do not show that if there is not a likelihood of harm and in violence. In fact, it shows just the opposite. This court has already addressed their argument regarding whether this pertains to foreign activities. Obviously, all this, their own FOIA request was regarding the killing of bin Laden in Pakistan. That was the words in their own FOIA request.
Could I ask you about, I think, what's probably the third prong, which is, so in addition to the requirement that it be specifically authorized under the executive order criteria, it has to be properly classified, as I take to be their arguments regarding the procedures of classification. Could you explain paragraph 8 of Ms. Culver's affidavit? That is, I am not clear as to whether there is an original classification authority named on the document at all, or whether there never was an original classification authority because it was derivatively applied from a classification manual. And I'd say the paragraph is not clear to me. Could you explain it?
What that paragraph says is that what's identified is the person who first classified it using derivative authority under classification guidance.
So there is no, the first classifier is not an original classification. Is that correct?
As appropriate under the executive order.
I just want to, I'm not challenging the appropriate, that's the next question, but the first question is just the facts.
Yes, Your Honor.
So there is no original classification authority other than the classification guide. Well, is that right?
In those instances under the executive order, the person who authorizes the classification guidance and approves it is considered the original classification.
The author of the guide.
Is considered the original classification authority, and the person then acting under that is using that as a derivative authority. But so the person who's identified is not the original classification authority. It does identify the original classification authority as the guide.
I see. And could you take me through the executive order? I take that to be part 2, derivative classifications.
Can I just follow up on Judge Garland's question, though?
Sure.
In my hypothetical is someone with the original authority comes up with a guide, and it says there are 10 things you could consider, and then a low-level employee who has no authority in and of himself as a result of his position makes the determination that these documents are secret. And then someone comes along like Bennett, reevaluates, does a complete independent assessment. Is that our situation here?
Yes, but let me give a caveat. You said the person who has no experience. The people who are allowed to do derivative classification are people who are trained to do so, or aware of the, it's not just every, the executive order has a separate provision for just your average day Joe who comes into contact with information which may be classified. They can treat it as presumptively classified and required to do so until they can give it to someone who has either original or derivative classification authority.
It's the exceptional circumstances part.
Right.
Okay. So this case, it's somebody with derivative authority. So in other words, the first person to mark this document is not somebody with original authority, it's with derivative authority.
Right, and then it's, but the declarations also make clear that all times they was being treated as classified, and then they are the marked as classified by the derivative authority, and that's the person who's identified.
What I wanted you to do is explain to me how the executive order authorizes this kind of procedure, but I also wanted to ask, since we don't have the guide here, can you give us an idea of what kind of thing might be in the guide that leads to this? So, for example, would the guide say something like photos of covert operations abroad are to be classified, or inflammatory photos abroad, or, I mean, what level of generality is the guide at with respect to the way in which the person with only derivative authority is making the classification?
I believe the guide itself is classified, and I'd be hesitant to I mean, I would see if I would say those kind of things here.
The reason I ask this because it's the only case I found that has addressed this issue was the Southern District of New York case in which they quote from the guide. So not obviously not all the guide is
clear. Obviously not all of it, but we haven't. It wasn't part of the record here, and I'm not.
All right. Well, in that case, could you explain to me how this procedure is authorized by the executive order?
All right. So if you look in our addendum, page 6, which is
just tell me the section. I have the executive order.
All right. So it's 2.1, which says a person derivative classification authority is someone who's either reproducing something that's already been classified, or in the end of the sentence, or is directed by a classification guidance. And then in the next section is 2.2, which gives the criteria.
But it says. Persons who apply derivative classification marking shall, and lists three things, the second of which is observe and respect original classification decisions. Where is the original classification decision here?
The original classification in that instance is the guidance itself.
For us to make that judgment, doesn't it really depend on us seeing the guide or some level of specificity of the guide? What if the guide just says, do whatever you want?
Well, the criteria for the guide has to meet the Executive Order 2.2, which is the next provision.
Mm-hmm.
And it requires a certain amount of training, requires a certain amount of, it doesn't talk about the level of specificity, but it talks about the type of criteria that need to be and standards that need to be in the guide itself. And the plaintiffs here haven't argued and whatever the guideline is here, that they haven't argued that that's been violated or that there's any judicial rights created by the guideline itself.
No, but they have argued that there's no original classification authority listed on the document.
I think whether there was or not, we have, as Judge Rogers pointed out, we have Director Bennett who...
So I take that to be a fallback position. That is...
Right, but what happened here was what happens, you know, usually the person who runs into the information in the first instance is not an original classification authority. Those people are very few in the government. I would say a large percentage of the classifications done to material people are done under the guidelines. People who are abroad, people who are on ships abroad, or in CIA locations abroad. So there's nothing sort of unusual about what went on here. And then what happens is part of the job of Director Bennett is to review those determinations and to declassify things which don't need to be classified.
Part of his job to review those things, regardless of whether there was a FOIA request? That is, had there been no FOIA request, is his obligation to review all initial classifications that are only derivative and to decide whether they were appropriately done?
I don't think it's his job to review all, because the amount of derivative classification
right.
The government
imagine.
Is probably tremendous, but certainly that's within his job description, is to ensure that information is properly classified and declassify information that is, overclassified.
And what about their question, which, again, I'm not clear from the responses, was the first classification applied by the person with derivative authority made before or after the FOIA request reached the CIA?
The district court recognized under their own timeline that the decision...
I'm interested in what the answer is.
Our position is that it was done before the FOIA request to the CIA here, which was done...
And when you say it's your position, that's your position as a matter of fact.
As a matter of fact,
okay.
Yes.
Okay, and what about the markings? Were they put on before or after the FOIA request?
The declarations on this say that they were marked at the time of Director Bennett's review as top secret, and that additional review was...
That would have been afterwards.
That would have been afterwards, Your Honor. The declarations don't speak to how they were marked before.
We don't know how they were marked before.
Right. I don't personally know that. Ms. Culver's declaration explains that additional review and scrutiny was done of them to make sure that all the proper markings were made, and that in her declaration she explains that that as of the time of her declaration, we have that they're marked with the identity of the original classifier who is under derivative authority, his authority, which is the guidance, the basis for the classification, declassification instructions, that those things are all marked on each record. And it really doesn't matter as a matter of law as to when those markings were made.
It does matter, because if it's, they're put on after, then you have the provision that requires case document-by-document review. In this case, there was document-by-document review, according to Ms. Culver. But if there hadn't been, it would matter. Isn't that right?
As to the markings, I mean, that goes to the substance of the review. But as to the markings, the question is, before the court, are they marked appropriately procedurally under the executive order? And we have a declaration, a very sufficient detailed declaration from Ms. Culver explaining how they're marked, and et cetera, and that they're sufficiently marked today. And the district court correctly said, in light of that detailed declaration, there was no need for in-camera review to make sure they were appropriately marked, because the declaration tells you everything you need.
The provision that's applicable to things that are done afterwards, is that only to the whether classification was made afterwards, or does it apply to
it speaks to the classification. So if the classification, so here there's no doubt the classification was done beforehand, but even if it wasn't, we have under 1.7D, it says it's completely fine to classify it after a FOIA request, as long as the person reviewing it is doing it under the direction of the agency head, which is what we have here. Director Bennett, under the declarations, was reviewing these on a document-document basis under direction of the director of the CIA, and made a determination that after that document-by-document review that it's all properly classified. So that's section 1.7D of the executive order. And that's, I think they try to make some big deal that this was, is some sort of extraordinary thing that is, again, a fairly a usual course of events as well. So it complies with the executive order because they were appropriately marked, and they meet the standards of the executive order. And as to the timing, 1.7D just makes that issue moot, because even if they're correct about, even if they're correct in their speculation that it was classified after their request, it just doesn't make a difference, because the review was done at the direction of the director of the CIA on a document-by-document basis. And Ms. Culver's declaration expressly states those salient facts.
Anything further?
No, Your Honor. We would ask this court to affirm the district court's judgment here.
Thank you.
Just want to briefly talk about the classification procedures. The government seems to suggest that this isn't a big deal, that we are...
I didn't hear them say that.
He suggested that this is how it happens all the time. If there were a problem, they fixed it, and the court should not be concerned about the classification procedures. Mm-hmm. However, Exemption 1 specifically requires that material be withheld only if it meets the classification requirements and that it was properly classified. To strike out one component of Exemption 1 would change the exemption into a disclosure statute instead of...
I know, but I think your burden now is to show that Mrs. Culver's declaration is contrary in some way to the procedures authorized by the executive order.
I think there are two points there. One, there is no evidence in the record that the classification took place prior to the receipt of the FOIA request. Okay. It's not in the record. None of the declarations state that. We heard it here today for the first time. Before today, we were unaware that the government made a classification prior to the FOIA request. It's just not in the record.
It is what the district court said, though, right?
But it wasn't in the record?
No, the district court said that it was done before. Not the markings, but the classification was done before.
I believe the district court said in the end the court didn't find that it mattered because of the clarification in the supplemental declaration. There's nowhere in either affidavit that states that the classification took place prior to the FOIA request. And why that is important is because Section 1.7D talks about the proper authority may classify or reclassify information after receiving FOIA request. It doesn't talk about a review on a case on a document-by-document basis. The government's argument is that Director Bennett reviewed the documents on a case individually, therefore it complies with the executive order. However, the executive order doesn't talk about subsequent review on a document-by-document basis. It talks about a classification on a document-by-document basis. In this instance, there's no evidence that the government followed the proper classification procedures when it allegedly classified all 52 records. We don't know when it took place, really how it took place. This was the first time.
What's the difference between reviewing and classifying? Ms. Culver says, I have personally reviewed each of the 52 unique responsive documents at issue in this litigation. Based on this review, I have confirmed that each of these records satisfies the procedural requirements of Executive Order 13526.
She talks about review there.
Well, she says she confirms. She's confirming that they are properly classified. Well,
that's correct, but
even if the classification occurred afterwards, here's somebody with original classification authority who says she's personally reviewed it and she confirms that they're properly classified. What more do you want her to say?
The executive order seems to be, the language is clear that it's a classification on an individual basis after the fact. Ms. Culver doesn't say that she classified the records.
She said she reviewed them and they were at that point properly classified. What? You mean the difference would be, and I hereby therefore reclassify them? Is that the additional words that have to be said?
In the FOIA context of declaration, the words matter. And in this instance,
there's no case where they've had both the head of the clandestine service and the person responsible for classification under the clandestine service saying that they have reviewed case by case and confirmed that it is now properly classified. So when you say there are cases, there's actually no case that's ever released a document on this ground. All the cases simply remand, but none of them have had one. I mean, in those cases, this is what we would be asking. We would be asking to send it back for remand for somebody to confirm that they're properly classified. And here you already have two people saying that. Why isn't that good enough?
The two declarations taken as a whole really doesn't explain what occurred, when the classifications occurred, and how they occurred. Today was really the first time that this discussion of a guide was used for the initial classification. Prior to this point, it appeared, and I believe the district court talked about that somebody else first classified the information. It was then sent or received. Somehow the CIA took possession of the information, the images, and they conducted a derivative classification of the information. It's unclear, as Your Honor said, what this guide is, what is in the guide. I mean, these affidavits about the classification are murky. They're unclear. They're not transparent. And the courts, to be able to decide whether or not the government followed the classification procedures, which is required by Exemption 1, the declarations have to be more sufficient. They have to be more specific. They have to be clearer, because otherwise there's room for abuse. And in this instance, for whether or not these materials would harm national security, whether or not these materials pertain to foreign activities, whether or not these materials would reveal intelligence activities or methods. All we are asking for...
What you're talking about now is the substance. What you were talking about a minute before was the procedure.
But in all... That's correct, Your Honor. But in all of these circumstances...
The only issue about what Ms. Culver was testifying about, who has the original, et cetera, that has to do with the procedures by which they were marked, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So the issues that you're talking about now are the ones that are either in Bennett's explanation of the danger that will result, or in the other one, Mellor, I think.
That's correct, Your Honor. I was just trying to, but in all of those instances, whether or not it's a substance or of a classification over those three or four affidavits, the issue is a lack of specificity, a failure to satisfy the government's burden of providing the court as well as the FOIA requester with enough information to figure out what the government did to properly and sufficiently analyze the claims of exemption. And in this case, with whether it be in regard to the classification procedure or the substance of the images, the government failed to provide the specificity necessary.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Take the case under advisement.